Hi, this is John Mayung from Dream Theater, and you're listening to the 9-8 podcast.
Well, hello, 9-8 listeners. My name is Dave Ellis. Thank you so much for joining us for another special episode of the 9-8 interview. This week on the 9-8 interview, we are very privileged to finally have on the show Mr. John Mayung from the renowned band Dream Theater. You may have heard of those. We'll be speaking about all things to do with the brand new album and, of course, what he's been up to. Great interview coming up. Stick around. You're going to love it. I guarantee you. John Mayung, welcome to the 9-8 podcast, on, of course, in conjunction with the Dream Theatre Fan Club of Australia and New Zealand. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Hey, not a worry at all. Now, I got to start with a question that we seem to be asking a lot these days, and that is, how are you faring with the pandemic? Are you and yours safe and sound?
Well, we kind of, the key was just to stay productive during the downtime. Mm-hmm. And I got to do a lot of cool things. One of them being in the area of product development. Ernie Ball Music Man has put out a signature version of the bongo six string that I've been playing. Mm-hmm. And it's been out for about a year now, and we're going to be celebrating the anniversary with the new color that I have picked out. Mm-hmm. So that was one really exciting development, was the launch of the Ernie Ball Music Man bongo six string, mm-hmm. JM bongo six string. Mm-hmm. And I've also have a distortion pedal that mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to release next year, mm-hmm. Made by Ashdown Engineering. Okay. Yeah, it's going to be called the JM Double Drive. It's a really neat pedal with two distinctive drive settings. Which I found to be really useful, so I'm looking forward to bringing that out on the upcoming tour next year, A View from the Top of the World tour.
Yeah,
and the third thing that I have been working on that is currently underway is a bass combo amp that's going to be made by Ashdown Engineering as well. Some people may know that Ashdown has been this amp that I've used selectively on certain records like Train of Thought. Mm-hmm. And I used it on Distance Over Time. And I really kind of gravitated towards it. I really appreciate what it does. So I'm looking forward to the concept behind this combo that I'm working on, because I don't know, I guess I was kind of just sitting at home. And it kind of brought me back to, like, how did this all start? You know, how did I start playing the bass, and what did I really love about it? And one of them was, you know what, I remember just sitting in my bedroom with a combo amp and just playing to records and just playing. And I really, really missed that. So that's what sparked the idea to want to do a combo. Mm. Something, you know, that you can carry around easily, and it's all there, you know, you plug in and you're ready to go. But I wanted it to be a little bit more, I wanted there to be more to it, where, it wasn't something that I would have to leave at home when time came to tour. It was something that I wanted to be able to handle the rigors of the touring environment. You know, being able to be a useful tool up on stage as well, in terms of the tone that I want. So, so that's what's currently underway. It's going to be a really cool combo, but it's going to be something that I can take on tour with me as well.
Fantastic. So the secret obviously was just to keep productive, as you say. Because it was, I think it was a rough, pretty safe to say that it was a rough 18, 24 months for a lot of people, particularly for you guys as well. I mean, the pandemic threw everyone's plans aside for the better part of 2 years. And you guys were almost in the middle of a tour. Well, you were in the middle of a tour with the previous album, as we affectionately refer to it, the Velocity album. And you normally the DT cycle is write, record, tour. But you didn't really get the chance to tour that album fully. So I suppose, did that impact what you were doing at all, either with your projects with Ernie Ball or with Ashdown, or even the writing of the new album, A View from the Top of the World?
Well, we were, we had just finished a DVD shoot for the Scenes from Our Memory anniversary tour in London. And literally, you know, we got home and then within like a week, like the headlines were just pointing out all these places where it's breaking out, and it's places that we were, you know, like Italy. And it was disappointing, extremely disappointing, because we had plans to tour Asia next, mm-hmm. and then further plans in North America. So when all that kind of fell apart, you know, the logical thing was just to kind of like wait it out and then and start a new record, which is what we did the fall of that year. No, it was, you know, take it day by day. You know, just only work with what you have, and that's that's what we were up against.
I mean, I suppose if you look at the general writing and touring cycle that Dream Theater have had for the last 35 odd years, it's very much that, you know, write, record, tour, sort of an album every two and a half years kind of thing. This one came out sort of quite quickly, or came about, I should say, quite quickly after the previous album. Did that affect the sound of the album at all, do you think, or do you just see it as a natural progression from the distance over time?
I see it as a progression. I mean, you're right. The album would have came out later. We'd probably be starting based on all the initial touring plans. Actually, I'm not sure. Maybe it would have aligned somewhat closely. But I mean, maybe it would have varied by like 3 months or so. But I see the View from the Top of the World very much a progression of the previous record. You know, we wanted to kind of continue in the vein of maintaining the excitement and the momentum of that record. And we got to do it in a different setting. Since over time, we recorded in a really beautiful barn that was converted into a studio. This time around, with the advent of technology making things possible to transform places into usable, you know, recording rooms and it's just that's the one thing that I think technology has done, is it's kind of streamlined a lot of things. So it's able to transform a place into a really good recording situation, which is what we did. We have a place that we did tour preparations and gear storage and things like that. And what we did was we transformed it into a studio. So that's where we did the album. It's really cool. And it was a little bit different. The approach for me sonically was more using like direct sounds, a blend of three different direct signals, not so much an amp sound. But it was comfortable. We didn't feel rushed in any way, and The Alien was the first track that actually came together. And that kind of set the tone and pace for the album. The Alien, I mean, it just starts off full energy, right from the first, right from the beginning. It set the pace, and the direction felt right, so we continued.
Okay. I did want to ask you as well about lyrical contributions to this album. Over the years, you've sort of not contributed a whole heap of lyrics to the Dream Theater catalog, but they came back in recent years, much to fan and mine delight as well. Have you got any lyrics on this album? I have heard the album; it's fantastic. But I don't have the lyric book, so I don't know if they're your lyrics or whomsoever's. So,
Yes,
are there any of them yours?
Awaken the Master.
Okay.
That's the 8-string song. John has a new Ernie Ball Music Band 8-string that he had gotten, and this was after the initial 6 tracks were recorded. He would just wanted to do one more track. We had gotten back into the studio in January of 21 to start the overdubbing process. But he really wanted to do another track, so based on his 8-string guitar. So we went to work on that before the overdubbing began, and that turned out to be Awaken the Master, which is a really cool song. It starts off with monstrous guitar, and he actually went lower by adding that 8th string, and I actually had to go higher because I couldn't match going lower. So what I did was I used a capo, and I put a capo on my 2nd fret. And it elevated my low E to an F sharp. And it gave me the relative tuning across the fretboard. So that was how I was able to sync up with what he was thinking. It turned out great. I love the way it sounds. It's actually the first time that I've ever used the capo on a bass, I think.
It's not particularly typical, is it, to put a capo on a bass? I mean, I'm a guitarist myself, but I'm not a bass player by any means. So I've got very little idea about bass world. So it certainly sounds like something that's a bit out of the box.
Yeah, definitely. It's not the ideal. It definitely works better on a guitar, but it worked out, It worked out because of the I mean, that's one cool thing about the 6-string version I'm playing now is the neck isn't super wide. It's somewhat guitar-like, so that's how I was able to get the capo to work on the really wide necks. I don't know if that would have been possible.
Yeah, because you've got basically a 5-string neck, don't you, on that 6-string? It's quite
Yes.
narrow,
Yes.
from memory. And it's funny because when I first saw you playing the Bongo 6, oh, it may have been a little bit after the, I think it may have been, I think it may have been as far back as the Black Clouds and Silver Linings tour, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe it was the one after. I remember looking at the bass and going, that's a very narrow neck on that. You know, that looks, it doesn't look like a 6-string neck. You know, it doesn't look like you'd be fighting it as someone like me with meat hooks for hands, you know. So exactly. It was interesting. And then when you obviously announced the new one, I sort of went, oh, okay, so it was. There you go. That's either I was right or maybe I was just looking at it in a weird light. I don't know.
Yeah, what you saw was probably the initial prototypes that I was using.
Mm.
It's a perfect fit. It just feels, you know, it's one of these things where if it feels right, then that must mean something. You know, this is, you know, I'm onto something. This is what it has to be. It just felt very in proportion with with my hands, you know. Just kind of just works with the anatomy of my hand, you know, and how it interfaces with the fingers, and you know, and just, you know, it changes everything, changes the whole feel and makes things easier to play, for sure. So I'm very happy with it, you know. I'm very, very pleased.
Lyrically, just on the album as well, lyrically, a lot of the albums that we've reviewed here at the 9-8 over the last 18 months been quite dark, you know, a lot of feelings of loneliness, isolation, etc. Some of the songs on the album seem to lean toward this as well. Was that a general overall feeling whilst writing the album, or was it just sort of the way it came out?
Well, we all wrote about different things, you know, and that's one of the cool things about being in a band, is being able to get all these different perspectives, in this period of time that we're in. And I wouldn't say it really falls in the dark category. You know, even the top of the world conceptually, John was referencing, you know, the spirit of what drives people to take on, you know, huge endeavors like scaling difficult mountaintops and stunts. And the attraction to that, and the inspiring, you know, and I actually found it really inspiring. Awaken the Master. The word master is a metaphor for the heart. So essentially what it's saying is awaken the heart. And that song is very much about sort of balancing. I think the key to finding balance in life is to bring in your heart, you know, it has the capability to listen, as well as your ears. The ears can hear, then your heart can listen too. So sometimes when you bring that into the equation, you wind up with a different answer, depending on what is inputting the data. So that was sort of what was going on conceptually with that. I mean, it's really interesting. I saw a documentary called Inner Worlds, Outer Worlds, and it talks about the advancement and speed of technology and how we can work against this if human spirituality isn't able to keep up with it. If things are not balanced, it can work against us rather than help us. So I see that as one of the challenges going forward.
It's interesting you bring things like that up, because it's something I've always wondered, and something I always wanted to ask you, if I ever got the opportunity to interview yourself. And that is, you are one of the top bass players in the world. I mean, all the members of Dream Theater are indeed the same. It's a band of musicians basically playing musicians' music, right? But unlike some of the others in the band, for example, probably most notably Jordan or John Petrucci. They've got a lot of extra band activities. You know, they're sort of everywhere with a whole bunch of different things going on. You tend to keep your head down and you keep out of the limelight quite a lot. I suppose my question is why?
Well, it's not a purpose. It's not something that I do on purpose. It's I don't really feel a need for it. I mean, I'm happy doing what I do. And you know, between the demands of touring and the demands of professional time, the demands that that places on my life, and then also being with my family and taking care of all the responsibilities there, that pretty much keeps me busy. And I do, I have worked with Ty Tabor and Rod Morgenstein on records under title The Jelly Jam, and so that's like the one thing that if I do depart outside of Dream Theater, that's something that I enjoy doing. And that's really cool because that's a whole other learning experience too, being in that the basic tracks and writing and stuff is stuff that's done at my house. So I get to learn and push myself a little bit more in terms of learning the engineering aspect of recording and things like that, which is good. You know, it may be frustrating at sometimes, but definitely pushes me, which is good because, that's stuff that I don't really have to worry about. You know, when we saw Dream Theater record, I mean, everything is, we already have people in place to run all the machinery and wires and everything, you know, so it's very much just walk in and play and apply oneself. But when you're doing stuff outside, it tends to be a little bit more demanding. You have to be a little bit more hands-on with every aspect, which is good. It's not that I'm not doing nothing. Trust me, I'm staying busy.
I wasn't inferring that at all. I've just always been curious as to why it seems like there's big personalities in the band, and you're very good at what you do, and you're enjoying what you do, and you can definitely tell that. But there's I've always wondered why it is that you haven't had that same, sort of upfront, a lot of media coverage and being in the interviews and all that kind of stuff. It always seems to be John and Jordan and to an extent now James as well doing interviews, and Mike as well when he was in the band as well, but Mike Portnoy as well. And I think this is the first time I've actually had the opportunity to interview you over the years that I've been speaking with you guys and running the fan club and all that stuff. So it is an honor, and I will say that straight up. It's absolute honor to speak to you. But I've always wondered why it is that it seems like you've chosen to stay out of the interview, the press gallery, as it were. Obviously you've got stacks of other commitments, and you let your playing speak for yourself, for itself, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully going forward, I'll start doing more interviews, and I'll try to balance that part of my career a bit more. It'll be needed anyway. I got a lot of cool stuff coming out, so I'm going to be pressured to be talking about it. So, so stay tuned.
Absolutely, damn journalists, we can't get enough. So in addendum to that as well, and you sort of half answered it there, Have your motivations for being a musician changed at all? I mean, you've come a long way since, you know, the practice room in Berkeley. Is it still about pushing the boundaries of music for you, or has your focus shifted to telling great stories, or, you know, is it more the production side that you're enjoying now as well? Obviously you're still doing stuff with the band and that's always going to be there. But I suppose, hearing the stuff about the production as well is really interesting. I'm not too sure many people realize that you do a lot of engineering and production and such like that at home.
Right. Well, I think yeah, the point of being alive is to grow,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't think that's necessarily something that ever stops. It's not dependent upon how old you are, you know. I think, you know, the goal is to live as long as possible and to very much be in the growth mode, where you're always learning and challenging and doing interesting things that you find meaningful. In a way, it's a big responsibility, you know, to kind of do something that falls under that category that you feel has meaning. That has, you know, somewhat of a purpose, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know, that's what Dream Theater is about, I think, you know. Just kind of putting out what we feel is right for us to be doing, and hopefully it's inspiring and doing the same for others, you know, being part of people's lives, and like all the bands that, you know, I grew up listening to, it's sort of like the same cycle, just in a different period of time, you know. Like the same thing is going on. The only thing that's really changing is the players, the people that are involved, you know. So,
absolutely.
You know, that's, I think that's the motivation. Yeah, you know, that's what pushes you. And to figure out better ways to kind of do what you do, you know. And a big part of that is just, you know, doing everything you can to be healthy, be strong, and to kind of take in as much as you can. And when you sit behind the instrument, to kind of channel that all in.
No, absolutely. And I'm aware that we are very quickly running out of time. I told Jake this would only be a half an hour interview. I'm going to try my best to keep to that. Now, I do have two final questions for you. I wouldn't be let out of this room being an Australian without asking, when can we expect DT to come back down under? I know you guys were scheduled to come here, obviously, before the pandemic hit. And can we still expect the same schedule with Perth being thrown into the mix as well? Is that kind of, there's so many questions around that, you know, there's so many people in the fan club wanting to know as well, whether or not it's going to be, the new album tour, or whether or not, you know, they're going to hear, scenes in its entirety. Is there any light you can shed on that, or, you know, maybe you can't, I don't know.
Well, I think the scenes touring is somewhat behind us at this point. We're moving forward with the new record, so it would be a tour based around the new record. And I know we definitely want to tour that part of the world. As to when, don't want to really get ahead of myself, but I know that if everything works out and this storm that we're in eventually blows over, and things kind of return back to normal and travel restrictions start to ease, which I think they're starting to do right now. So it's really in the hands of something that we don't have control over. But I know, should the opportunity arise, that it was something that we would definitely do.
Absolutely. And we'd love to have you back, obviously. So we're champing at the bit to get you back. If I can just make a suggestion too, if you've got any way to control it and you've got the ability to play in Sydney for a couple of nights, do the Enmore Theatre. I think I said this to John last time I spoke to him. It's a much better room, and I think you'd have a much nicer time there rather than the Horden Pavilion that you've played at a few times. But I'll leave that up to
Okay.
you. But just as a Sydney sider who's, loves the place and has been there for many years, definitely the best room in Sydney. Now, final question, and I promise this is the last one. Thank you so much for your time, by the way.
Sure, thank you.
This is just a bit of a fun one that we generally end every interview with. And that is, if you were contractually obligated to play one song every night for the rest of your career, what would it be and why? And it doesn't have to be one of yours, it can be anything.
One song for every day of my life?
Yeah, well,
Is the
every
question?
show,
Or every
Yeah.
show? It's a good one. What would be a good song to play every night? Don't really know what that would be. Have to get back to you on that one.
That's all right. All right. When you finally get down to Australia, I'll ask you again.
Okay.
And we can have a chat around it then. Now, a view from the top of the world, brand new Dream Theater album, out October 22nd this year, across the globe. You can pre-order it now. There's some super awesome deluxe editions available as well. Check those out. We'll put the links in the show notes below. John Myung, it's been an honor. Thank you so much for being on the show, and thanks for giving us some of your valuable time.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Well, there you have it, fellow podcast lovers, John Myung of the Mighty Dream Theatre. Thank you so much for checking this out. Now, if you do want to give us a little bit of your hard-earned money, we'd really appreciate it. It does go a long way to helping us keep this show on the air. $3 a month, and you actually get access to interviews like this before absolutely anyone else. And if you are listening to this on Patreon, thank you so very much. We really appreciate your support. Next time on the 98 Podcast, we are going track by track on the brand new Dream Theater album, A View from the Top of the World. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a hell of an episode. My name is Dave Ellis. Thanks so much for listening in. We'll see you next time.